Welcome back to Footsteps in the Attic. I am thrilled to have my guest on today because he is truly part of the fabric of American pop culture. He was the voice of one of the biggest animated characters of all time. My guest today was the voice of Charlie Brown. Please welcome to the show, Mr. Duncan Watson. Duncan, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty well, thanks. Another day at work, but it's a Friday, so a weekend looming. Pretty happy about that.
And how are things in New Hampshire?
A little snow on the ground, feeling very festive and holiday-ish. It looks good. Looks like it's going to be a good holiday season.
That is excellent. I mean, and, you know, it's a magical time of year. And, you know, you were a young boy when Charlie Brown Christmas first aired in 1968. And then roughly about 7 years after that, you get this audition to be the voice of Charlie. So I'd like to ask, like, what was that like for you? And what can you remember about that?
Well, yeah, as you mentioned, you know, the original voice, Peter Robbins, voiced Charlie Brown for the original Christmas special. And in 74 is when the producers of the show, so Charles Schulz wasn't involved in the productions of the television shows whatsoever. And so he would, Bill Melendez and Lee Mendelson were the ones who were primarily responsible for the content of the specials, and they would work with the voice actors specifically. And when a voice actor would voice out, they would go around to the local schools, you know, in the area. And I happened to live at that time in Northern California, in the Bay Area, specifically Tiburon, California, which is part of Marin County. And the Schulz family, has a big presence in Santa Rosa and other spots up in that area. They came to our school, for auditions, and my particular story is, you know, kind of, you know, perfectly Charlie Brownish. It's, I was at recess and heading back to my own class, and I noticed that there was a line outside of a classroom door that was not my own classroom. And rather than going back to class, I just stood in the line. I didn't have any idea what the line was for. It just looked like it more interesting than where I was heading. So I stood in the line, and when I got to the front, they asked me, you know, what character I would like to read for. And I said, really, I have no idea, you know, what's going on here. So they said, okay, fine, sit down and read these couple of lines. And so I read a couple of lines, and they said, thank you very much. And I went back to my class, and I didn't think anything of it. It was so unremarkable that I didn't even tell my parents about it. Oh. And about 3 weeks later, my mom got a phone call from Lee Mendelson Productions saying that they had liked my voice test, and would it be possible for me to come into San Francisco you know, soon to record another voice test, because they were continuing to narrow down the voice choices. And at that point, they were offering to pay me $50 to come in to do that voice test, which, you know, $50 these days doesn't sound like a whole lot, but back in 1974, $50 was probably the equivalent of $500.
Yeah.
And for an 11-year-old boy, that would definitely get your attention.
For sure. That's incredible. It was like fate that you were meant to stumble upon that audition.
Yeah, fate, or I mean, you know, blind luck. I'm not sure, but I actually have a little curveball for you today. So
yeah,
I was at the Comic Con a couple of weeks ago now down in the Philly area, Phoenixville, and there was a voice actor there, Vic, who had, you know, was big in the anime world, and he was talking to riffing some ideas off of me, and he had his personal assistant whip something up for me. And I wanted to play it for you and get your thoughts on it.
Oh, please do.
This is just something that was whipped up by Vic's personal assistant. He lives down in Texas. I'm not sure where she's from, but anyway, they threw this together, and you know, it's sort of blowing my own mind. But here we go.
Let's go. This is a treat.
Hi. My name is Duncan Watson, the voice of Charlie Brown. I was 12 years old when I voiced everyone's favorite blockhead. You may be thinking, good grief, that was 50 years ago and he's a grown-up now. But through the magic of technology, you can get a personal message from me in the classic voice of Charlie Brown on Cameo.com.
So that was sent to me, and that was just a mock-up. I'm not actually on Cameo at this point, but that is my voice from when I was 12 years old.
That, I mean, that actually blows my mind. I mean,
you and me both.
And that is your voice. So it's just, I mean, I don't even know what to say. That's, I mean, wow. I'm truly wowed.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
I'm looking for that person that understands the potential for this to sort of help guide me in the direction that this needs to go, because something needs to happen with this. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. And I would imagine when you go to these things, you probably get requests all the time. Well, what does Charlie Brown sound like all grown up?
What's funny about it is that people, you know, a lot of people mistake that I can still sound like Charlie Brown.
Right. Right.
Don't understand that all the voice actors for Peanuts are children,
right?
And that, you know, both the men and the boys and the girls that ultimately voice out for various reasons. But as you mature, your voice changes. You know, particularly for boys, obviously it gets much deeper. And you know, that's just part of how that goes. But you know, that's part of the appeal. Obviously, is you know the way that the character's voice is, you know, in an actual child's voice. And I think that, you know, it has that sort of halting feel to it. So it's not a smooth, you know, line delivery. It's more like, you know, how a kid would talk. And I think that's been a genius move on their part for all these years.
That's such a good point, because I've done voiceover in the past. I've had friends that have been in the industry, and you're right. Like if you're an adult and you're reading for a teen, you still have to have a certain tone in your voice. So what better way to capture the voice of a child than to cast a child in the role? And I'm curious what you do remember about, you know, your recording sessions for these specials. Like what kind of direction did you receive when you were recording it? I mean, I can imagine how because voiceover, I want to say, is a lot harder than people think it is. You have to hit every, you know, pronunciation, every S, every T has to sound clear. So there is a lot to it. And I'm just curious what you remember about those sessions when you were recording it.
Well, your reflections of what a voice actor, you know, the difficulty of it is, those are all astute observations. Yes, it is Thank a you. Craft. It's an art. But, you know, I want to make sure that people understand that in my case, you know, there was literally no talent involved with what I was doing. I mean, I was using my own voice. Now, yes, of course, in the script, if it called for some type of inflection or whatnot, and I wasn't delivering the line that they wanted the way that they wanted it, of course, they would, you know, talk to me in my ear because I was in the recording studio, usually by myself. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there was other voice actors there. And there was a couple of times there were some group scenes where we like sang a song, for instance, in Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown, and all the actors were in there singing the song. But more likely you were in the studio by yourself with the headphones on, sitting in front of a microphone. And then the producer and the engineer would be in the recording booth. You could see them, you know, past the microphone, behind the glass there. And, you know, they would just be, you know, talking in your ear if they wanted something. But I mean, like for instance, you know, because I was, you know, 11 going on 12 when I started recording Be My Valentine, Charlie Brown, I was very literal at that point. And so when I was reading the script in that case called for me to sigh.
Yeah.
And so I kept reading the word sigh as sigh. And so I kept on going, sigh.
Oh, right, right, right.
And they were like, no, we want you to sigh. And I'm like, yeah, okay, sigh. Sigh. You know, they're like, no, we actually want you to go, okay, I got it now. So, you know, I mean, you know, whereas, you know, voice actors in general, you know, the ones that are working today and the ones from the past, I mean, Mel Blanc from Looney Tunes, for instance, you know, the greatest of all time, you know, they actually had talent. You know, they could inhabit a character and change their voices, you know, to fit what they were trying to convey. Whereas, you know, with the Peanuts characters, it was children reading in children's voices. And, you know, I just don't want to attribute any talent to that, because it was, you know, literally just reading off of a script.
Well, I still think you did a wonderful job at it, especially at that age. I'm curious, out of all the specials you did, do you have a personal favorite? Is there one that kind of has a special place in your heart?
Well, I mean, I think that the original one that I did, Be My Valentine, Charlie Brown,
yeah,
sort of most, you know, what a lot of people's experiences are. I mean, I still find myself getting caught up in the trap of, you know, getting expectations that are wildly out of line with, you know, what should be happening in any given moment. You know, like when Charlie Brown, you know, gets all excited about Valentine's Day and, you know, doesn't bring one briefcase, but two briefcases for the overflow. I mean, I can't even tell you how many times I've brought the proverbial two briefcases to an occasion, you know, thinking about all the things that are going to happen. And then, you know, of course, when you create expectations like that, it's very hard to live up to those things. And, you know, Charlie Brown doesn't learn that lesson very easily, and neither does Duncan Watson.
Well said. Well said, sir. I'm curious, at the time, what did your friends think? You know, like, hey, our buddy is Charlie Brown. And did you ever get recognized in public by your voice at that time?
No, never recognition from the voice, for sure. That was never a thing. But you know, you can imagine. I mean, so I was, you know, in like, you know, fourth or fifth grade or something like that when this was going down. And that's not exactly the time of your life when you want to be standing out from the crowd.
Right.
You're truly trying to fit in. I mean, you're in zebra mode. You know, you just want to be part of the herd. And, you know, when a limousine comes to your school to pick you up, to take you to a voice recording session, it's kind of hard for people not to notice. And it's, you know, not always a positive thing. I mean, I was socially, you know, very isolated where I lived in Tiburon, California. I mean, it's a beautiful place, but, you know, for a young kid who didn't have anything for transportation other than their bicycle, you know, and not a lot of friends lived, you know, in my neighborhood. It was very isolating. So I was, you know, always on the outside looking in. I wanted to be part of the cool kids, but the cool kids didn't want anything to do with me. And the nerds were always like, you know, hey, come hang out with us. And at that point, you know, I was, you know, giving the nerds a stiff arm. So right. I was sort of in the middle of those two worlds while this Charlie Brown thing was going on. And yeah, I mean, it was cool. But at the same time, you know, it made me stand out, and I didn't like the standing out part of it. But, you know, I certainly, you know, can appreciate, you know, everything associated with that, this iconic role that I've managed to stumble into. And I'm very humbled and grateful for all of it.
Wow. Again, well said. Do you have memorabilia at home? Do you have like a Charlie Brown collection? Is there anything that, you know, you have a little room that has a little homage to your work?
Yeah, one of my favorite items that I've gotten over the years. I mean, so yes, I mean, of course, I did even back way in the day, I collected a few things. Like, for instance, I mean, I know, you know, some of your listeners will certainly be able to relate to this, but, you know, a lot of them won't even know what I'm talking about. But back in the day, there was this thing that was more popular than the Bible. And it was the TV Guide. And if you wanted to know what was on TV, you had to get your TV Guide, because then you'd plan your time out to watch TV. And, you know, there was no video recorders. There was no, you know, streaming or anything like that. It was whatever was on at that time was what was on. And if you wanted to watch it and you weren't there, you were out of luck until the next year, possibly. So, you know, when you go out to buy the TV Guide and then flip through it and see, you know, Be My Valentine, Charlie Brown, or You're a Good Sport, Charlie Brown, or, and they Race for Your Life was a movie, so that ended up in the movie theaters. But when you see your name in the TV Guide, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you what a thrill that was. So I have, you know, one of the old TV guides that, you know, with my name in it that I collected. But one of my favorite collectibles, you know, is not a, you know, a licensed Peanuts thing. Actually, when I was in my fraternity, you know, one of the pledges from the fraternity selected me as their quote unquote big brother. And one of the rituals is that the pledge creates a paddle for their big brother. And in this case, my little brother, Mike, made a Charlie Brown paddle for me, for my fraternity, Sigma Beta. And, I still have that up on my wall at home, and, it's definitely one of my favorite, you know, collectibles, because it's one of a kind.
That is amazing. I bet he never thought when making it for you that it would be hanging on your wall these years later. Do you know? That's amazing.
No.
Is there any funny or quirky requests you've had from fans that stick out? I can imagine you've run the gamut at your appearances. Have you ever been asked to, like, you know, like, sign something that was going to be made into a tattoo, or just something that sticks out to you?
You know, each time I sort of venture out with the Charlie Brown thing, you know, you run into something new. I mean, I you know, all the requests that I've had thus far have been, you know, mostly G-rated, which is definitely a good thing. But, you know, I had somebody who came in to one of the Comic Cons. You know, they were all dressed up in some sort of a Mario Brothers thing. And they had me sign a plunger, which was, you know, I mean, you know, it's actually trickier than you think it is to sign a punt plunger, and I don't know that too many people do that, but yeah, that was definitely a strange one. But you know, I'm happy to accommodate fans' requests. I mean, I know that you know, there's a lot of people out there who, you know, have friends or family who, or maybe themselves, who are just huge fans, and you know, and what I get, you know, when I get to connect with them at the comic conventions, it's really, really lovely to hear, you know, sort of their origin stories of you know, how they became Phoenix fans and why it's important to them, and recognizing that, you know, in many ways my voice was a connection, you know, to their past, or a connection to a loved one or family or friend, and you know, that really, you know, sort of brings it home as you know, the importance and how iconic the whole Peanuts franchise really is to so many people's lives in ways that, you know, it's sometimes hard to imagine, you know, what impact you've had, because you don't get that connection unless you meet up with them in some way, which is these comic conventions provide a good outlet for that.
Very well said. And, you know, it's funny because Snoopy and Charlie Brown are still going strong. I mean, they're iconic. I could go to a CVS, a Walmart, and a Target and still see Peanuts merchandise, you know, whether it's ornaments or the Charlie Brown Christmas tree. And you're a part of all that. So I'm curious, like, when you're out and about and you see that in a Target or a Walmart or a CVS, like, how does that feel internally to know, like, yeah, that's I'm in that club?
Yeah, I mean, you know, certainly I think that the iconic aspect of it has been hammered home later in my life, more so than it was at the beginning, for sure. I mean, I was so young when it first started, and yeah, of course I thought it was cool, but you know, it's not like something that, you know, as a young adult that what have you, it wasn't the kind of thing that, you know, you just bring up in conversation, you know, like, yeah. Oh, hey, by the way, you know, when I was a kid, I was the, you know, that's an awkward thing to do. So, you know, most of the time, you know, people find out in roundabout ways that, you know, that I voiced the character, and, you know, I'm always, always happy to talk about it, because it is, you know, when I really step back and think about it, it's not overwhelming, but it just fills me with, you know, a lot of pride. I love the, you know, all the Peanuts franchises. I think Charles Schulz was an absolute genius, and I'm so glad that there's a new generation of fans coming up with Peanuts. You know, they're still producing specials, and you know, apparently, I guess there's another movie coming out. And you know, gosh, I mean, now that I can apparently, through artificial intelligence, voice Charlie Brown again, I'm wondering if I ought to audition.
Oh, amen. Yeah, I think you need to. I mean, it's immortal, both through AI and through pop culture. So yeah, I could totally see that happening.
Yeah, except that there's definitely got to be some sort of balance there, because I don't want to be elbowing out some future 11-year-old voice of Charlie Brown. You know, that would definitely not be cool in my mind. But I don't know what to do with it, but I hope that there's something that can be done with it that presents a proper balance of respecting, you know, what the Peanuts franchise is all about, but also getting me back in the game a little bit.
That's right. And hey, you were there first, Duncan. So
I was actually the fifth voice of Charlie Brown.
Is that right? The fifth?
Yep. You know, there's easy ways to go, you know, find out, you know, who were the voices for the various specials. Of course, Peter Robbins, the original. And you know, and I was fortunate that, you know, like most of the Charlie Browns, you know, voiced Charlie Brown for, you know, simply a year before they voiced out, because they were getting, you know, the 12 and 13-year-old boy voices at that time. And I happened to get the part when I was 11, and I voiced it. You know, 75 to 77 were the times I was selected. So I got to do three shows where most voices haven't gotten to do, you know, the specials of that number. So and I'm also one of the few former voices out there, sort of out there doing the comic conventions and whatnot. So I get attributed for a lot of things that I didn't do, and I did the three specials, the two specials and the one movie, and I did quite a bit of voiceover work for commercials at that time, Dolly Madison fruit pies and Weber bread and some other things. But it was a great gig, and it's been the gift that keeps giving, because a lot of people will always want to know, like, do you get residuals? And the answer to that is yes, I do get residuals, and I don't track it at all. So when I was selected as the voice, one of the things I had to do was join the Screen Actors Guild, which frankly was probably the best investment I've ever made, was joining the Screen Actors Guild, because they've basically taken on the task of tracking, anything that I've done, voice-wise, so that I get compensated. And, every once in a while, this is very infrequent. Of course, this is, 48 years after the fact. I'll get a random check in the mail. I oftentimes don't know exactly what it's for. It might be for Canadian TV rights.
Right.
When they sold the franchise, the TV specials to Apple TV, that was a pretty good payday. But if you've ever walked down the street and seen a $10 bill laying on the ground and think, oh, it's my lucky day. Well, that's exactly what it's like to get a check for residual from Charlie Brown, every time. And it's not a lot. It comes in at net like $12, something like that. But it's like finding money on the ground.
Yeah. I know exactly that feeling.
Yeah, it's a great feeling, and I'm grateful for it. And apparently it's still got legs in life, so it'll keep going on ad infinitum.
That's right, and with licensing and everything else these days, those checks can increase too. So, and I like your attitude about it. You're not like hardcore with tracking it. You just let it be a surprise.
Yeah, well, it doesn't make any sense to track something like that. I've got enough stuff to keep me busy, but I did get to meet this past summer. I got to go out. I was invited as a special guest for the Peanuts Night at the San Francisco Giants game back in August of this year. And Melanie, who voiced the voice of Lucy, Melanie Cohn, voiced the voice of Lucy when I was doing it. And of course, I was the Charlie Brown at that time. And so she got to throw out the first pitch, and I got to holler out play ball to start the game. So that was a big thrill. And we got to hang out with Charles Schulz's son, Craig. At the Giants game, and met his lovely wife. And one of the things I found out while I was out there was that one of the specials I had done, which is much, the more obscure of all of them, was You're a Good Sport, Charlie Brown. And it's Charlie Brown in a motocross race.
Yeah.
And what I did not know at that time was that was based on where Charles Schulz's son, Craig, was in his life at that time. Craig Schulz was a big motocross racer. And so that was sort of, a little bit about his own life. And it turns out that one is Craig Schulz's favorite Peanut special, which I was thrilled about. And that also won an Emmy Award. So I found out two things back in August that I did not know. And then the year before that, I found out something that just blew my mind as well, which was, in You're a Good Sport, Charlie Brown, I'm the credited voice actor for Franklin in that particular episode, where I had one line that apparently I did, unbeknownst to me until about a year ago. I voiced Franklin in that show.
So, and you just found this out. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's, it makes sense. If they have voice actors and they have, characters that have, like one line, they'll voice actor and say, read these lines, because people aren't necessarily going to notice the difference. And obviously, if they had more lines, that they would get a voice actor specifically for that. But in this case, they probably just said, hey, read this line. I read the line like I was asked to do, and then I didn't think anything of it. But I was very tickled to find out that I was a credited voice actor for Franklin.
That's incredible. Yeah, you're in the booth, you have the headset on, they have the script, it saves time. They're like, hey, read this, and then boom, you get double credit.
Right, exactly. No residuals from Franklin, but that's okay.
you know what you did.
I know what I did, exactly.
Now, in 2005, you came back to the voiceover world, not that you ever left, and did a movie called Dougal, and that had a huge cast: William Macy, Chevy Chase, John Krasinski, Jimmy Fallon, Kylie Minogue, Bill Hader. What was that experience like for you?
Well, I wish I could tell you about that experience, but that was an experience that I did not have, so I'm not sure where that credit came from.
Oh, you're kidding.
That was definitely not me.
Oh, that is funny. That is on your IMDb. So someone at IMDb needs to remove that.
Yeah, this is a weird thing. I mean, I've had this happen before where I've been a credited actor or voice actor for different things, and I have made attempts to say, that's not me.
Yeah.
I wish it were, and you know, and for anybody out there in your world who is involved in this world, if they want to hire me as a voice actor for something or otherwise, have at it. But I did not do that.
Oh, well, I apologize for that. I've actually had that same experience, not obviously at your level, but I was an actor for many years. I did some voiceover stuff, and there are stuff on IMDb that I'm like, how did that get on there? So somebody must have just like added your name and like, oh, he did voiceover. Duncan's in this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is funny because I mean, I have seen, I've gotten credited for other things as well. And I'm like, where did this even come from? I have no idea.
But you know what, Duncan, if they want to send royalty checks your way for that, I mean, you know, let's not stop them. So, you know, if you want to send Duncan a check in the mail for Dougal, please do.
Well, and I would like to have met Kylie Minogue. I'm a fan of her. So,
Me too. Post voiceover, you've started your own company. Like, what was life like outside of the Hollywood and voiceover bubble?
Well, so I also, at the same time I joined the Screen Actors Guild back in that time, I got an agent because that's just what you do. And
yeah,
I started going to auditions, take whatever the next logical steps in the career were. But I did find that when I was doing screen testing in particular, and I was on a soundstage, and you know, there's no audience out there, so there's no feedback that you're getting. You're reading lines, but you're not really sure what the context particularly is. I mean, again, I'm a young kid at this point, so I have no acting experience, no coaching, and I'm trying my best, you know, to do based on their direction. But I went on a number of auditions for various things, and nothing really panned out, except that one time I was apparently cast in a movie, but at the time they were going to start the shooting, I was away hiking with the Boy Scouts, and so they went with whoever was the next person that they had auditioned. And you know, that's you know, one of those forks in your road of your life. But that turned out to be the movie Benji that I had been cast in, apparently.
Oh wow.
And I didn't get that part because I was away with the Boy Scouts. And then shortly after that, my family moved from California to New Hampshire. And really there's no acting or voice work, of Hollywood style out in New Hampshire. So it really just sort of, my career, you know, faded from there. And as I said, I mean, I didn't have any particular talent when I started. So I took my life in a very different direction, and, no regrets, no looking back on it. With any regret whatsoever, but I'm glad that I got to do what I did, and you know, who knows what the next steps are.
Wow, I like your attitude, though. You have a great perspective on your life and the business, and it sounds like you have a very healthy balance, and that's, everybody can learn from that. I'm curious.
Every day,
yeah,
Charlie Brown. That's the thing about, you know, Charlie Brown is that, you know, Charlie Brown, I always consider him to be the ultimate optimist. You know, I mean, you know, I know that a lot of people will, you know, immediately say, you know, oh, Charlie Brown, he's just, you know, a sorry loser or whatever. But I see Charlie Brown in everybody, you know, where, you know, everybody has had occasion to get knocked down in their life. And, you know, it's not how many times you get knocked down, but it's the picking yourself up and carrying on is the brave work that we're all called to do. And that's where Charlie Brown can be inspiring, because in spite of many, many setbacks, many footballs being pulled away, Charlie Brown always thinks, well, maybe this time will be different, and keeps going.
I love that. And, you know, in an industry where a small percentage of people are working, and let alone get to strike a chord with the American public and really the global public, you've truly succeeded because you're part of something, you're immortalized, you're part of something that isn't going to go away. And that is a huge accomplishment in life, especially at 12 years old. So that's a big deal, my friend.
Yeah, except that, I mean, it's been all downhill since I've been 12 years old. My best paying gig, you know, when I was 12 years old, and I've been going the reverse direction all the time.
I think you're being modest, but that was funny. I'm curious, what is your favorite holiday movie?
Oh, gosh. I mean, you know, I have always been a fan of Love Actually.
Great choice.
I'm a huge fan, and this is a fairly recent movie, but Spirited with Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell. I'm very captivated by that. I'm a sucker for a good musical.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the wacky one. I mean, you know, of course, there's, you know, many old school ones, but my own children have wrestled me into the present with more contemporary movies, and so the Christmas Chronicles are just absolutely bizarre and wacky, and I love watching those. So there's you know, there's I'm definitely a little more contemporary with some of the things that I've liked recently, but of course, I mean, you know, I can't resist a good Grinch episode.
Oh yeah.
And the Charlie Brown Christmas movie, I mean, a TV show is, you know, something that it does it really feel like Christmas if you haven't seen that? I'm not sure it does.
I love that. I just realized, like, if they ever do, you know, get that, the machine back and want to produce more, even though there's an upcoming film with Charlie Brown, I think it would be amazing to have you be both the grown-up Charlie Brown and the young Charlie Brown through AI, you know what I mean? Like a Christmas Story, similar to that. Like, you could do both roles. I think that would be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm the ghost of Christmas past and present as an adult, and then Charlie Brown.
Yes.
So that's an interesting idea. I never heard that one before, but that's clever. I like that. I mean, you know, the possibilities really are endless, and yet I also, you know that, you know, one of the things that I am 100% certain of is that it's really important to protect the integrity of the Peanuts franchise. Now, I know that, you know, back in the old school days, you know, I'm a big fan of old school animation, you know, and I got the chance to see the animation being done in real time back in the 70s, where they would, you know, hand draw, you know, every cell and then color it in, and then had to be, you know, absolutely precise. And there was, you know, thousands and thousands of drawings involved in producing a TV show, and even Peanuts has you know, shifted into computer animated computer animation, and so, you know, I'm not sure, you know, what and how you do stuff, you know, given the technology changes with the artificial intelligence. I just know it has to be really well thought through to understand what may be some unintended consequences from it, And if I'm thinking that way, certainly the people who are involved in the Peanuts franchise to keep it going are thinking that way too. And whether there's a meeting point of all of that may or may not involve me, who knows? I mean, you know, stranger things have happened. I mean, I just keep putting myself out there in the path of beauty and seeing what happens.
That's such a great way to be. It really is. And it's so healthy. Just, I applaud the way you live your life and that, and your perspective on things. And that to me, because of that, good things will just continue to happen. I truly, truly believe that. And that's very inspiring to hear that. So thank you for being just so humble and, you know, living your life the way you do.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm a big believer in serendipity, but yeah. You know, serendipity just doesn't come to you. You sometimes have to go to it.
Yes. Oh, good. Wow. That there's a fortune cookie right there, Duncan. So, Duncan,
Zen Charlie Brown here.
Yes, that's right. Duncan was very gracious with his time for me today, and he has things to do, but I do have to ask, where can people find you? What are your upcoming appearances? Please plug away.
Well, I've got no gigs lined up for 24 yet because I let Bossy Lucy take care of all that stuff. So Melanie is kind of a quasi agent of mine, and it works well when both of us are at these Comic Cons, because then people get to connect with more than one voice. But there'll certainly be something upcoming in 24. I just don't know what that is yet. My big thing coming up in the spring, sometime late spring, is I have a book coming out.
Oh.
And it's not specifically about Peanuts. It does reference that, but it's more about my professional career. I've been in public works now for 32 years in a small community in Southwest New Hampshire. And one of the things that I have done through in my career has been overseeing the city's solid waste program, the recycling, the trash, all that stuff. And there's been some absolutely amazing stories that have come out of that. And so I've written a book called Everyone's Trash. And it's not, suggesting that everyone is trash. It's talking about everyone
right.
generating trash, basically.
Yes.
And it's the stories about something that literally everybody, creates trash, and everybody has an opinion about it. And so these are the stories that, that come out of that. But it also does talk a little bit about, some of those questions that you asked me, and, the questions that I get asked at the Comic Cons, I try to answer that through the book.
Wow. And then when is that coming out? Is that through Amazon, or do you not have you chosen the venue for that yet?
Yeah, it hasn't. I've got a publisher. I have, we've just gone through the copy editing process. We're into cover art design. All this stuff has to happen. I'm a newbie to this, so I don't know exactly, how much more process this goes, but I've been told that somewhere between May, June, we'll have a book that will be available in bookstores and or Amazon or, whatever way you purchase your books.
That's phenomenal.
And I am probably going to do an audio book portion of it and use my voice for that.
Oh, perfect. And you get Charlie Brown. Anime, I mean, come on. You got to go out there and get that. That's perfect.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense.
It does. No, it's full circle right there.
Right.
So that's Everyone's Trash, Duncan Watson. So keep an ear out and an eye out for that. And I will also update people. I'll be talking with you, and I'll get, any appearances you have coming up, I will also plug, and you can just let me know, and I will filter that out.
Yeah, when I have more specifics, I'll send you a text on our phone and let you know what the specifics are.
Well, that would be wonderful, Duncan. And I really, really appreciate you lending me your time today. It means a lot to me, and you're an icon, and you're truly a giving soul. So I want to thank you for this. And I want to wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas, and I hope you'll come back sometime.
Well, thanks, Brian, and I'll leave you and the rest of your audience with this. Good grief. Happy holidays.
Perfect. That is full circle right there. Thank you so much, Duncan.
All right, Brian, you take care.
You as well. God bless.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Wow. Unbelievable. Charlie Brown on this show. Does life get any better than that? I have to throw in a quick plug, because there is a tremendously talented artist in this area here in Pennsylvania who makes the most beautiful hand-painted Christmas cards that you will ever see. On top of that, she also makes ornaments that are, I mean, they're beautiful. They're made from like dried fruit. Like, she hand makes these ornaments, as well as hand paints each individual Christmas card. So I want all of you to go to Claydo _, easy for me to say, cat at Instagram. So that's Claydo _cat, and look at Magda's beautiful artwork. You can order them directly from her Instagram site, and she will also deliver them to you if you're in the Philadelphia area. But go check them out. I just ordered a bundle of cards. They're amazing. They're beautiful. So check it out. You will not be disappointed. And Magda, I hope you and your animals have a very Merry Christmas too. And for everybody that listened today, thank you. I cannot believe Charlie Brown was here, but we have some more guests. We're not done for the season yet. We have more coming next week. But until then, this is Brian Hobson for Footsteps in the Attic. We'll see you soon, and Merry Christmas.